Michelle's a pro at this bowling night from match. She's a real head-turner and getting all the strikes and attention. But my eye's on Amy. A bit clumsy, hasn't hit a pin all night. But that's exactly what I like about her.
Meet singles at our match bowling nights. Join Match Free today. 18 and over, additional fees and subscriptions apply. See match.com for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini, episode number 778. It's your favorite football talkers anywhere. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming back after this week. Last week, a little scheduling snafu betwixt the two of us had to do it solo. I'll note that nobody heard me go to the Rick Martell 87 card of my partner quit on me, because he didn't. He's back this week. And we are all, of course, in great mourning about this horrible thing that happened to our country in recent days since we last convened here. And by that, of course, I mean the Indians losing the World Series. We're all dealing with it as best as we can. I am resolving to keep putting one foot forward in front of the other one here. I guess Kyle is also bummed about something with the election, even though his candidate finished in second. My candidate, Daryl Castle, was well down the list, but I'm taking it a lot better than he is. I can't figure out why.
Yeah, Daryl Castle finished under the quite under the drawbridge, didn't he there, pal? Daryl fucking Castle. Oh, Rick Morris is Yes, as I oh boy, yeah, I'll tell you what. Yeah, the Constitution Party, all right, huh? As I stare at the ashes of an American flag in the backyard fire pit and look in the mirror at my bright red CCCP shirt that I'm proudly wearing today, I should point out also that I have no clean underwear and have been freeballing for the last 24 hours. So it's been a rough time for me. And I just want to rant on, this isn't in your format, Tony, but I'm shooting right now. I just want to start up mode. As a guy, you see, I'm unique, as you know that, Rick. Well, I don't mean to put myself over. I'm a bit of a unique guy. I don't really fit. I've always kind of been that, square peg in a round hole kind of guy. But so I'm a bit unique, and I was a very staunchly pro-Bernie guy in the primary, but I had no problem converting to Hillary when it was over. And, the whole time I was sold, well, Hillary's has the best chance of winning. You know, Bernie's got nice policies. But, and this is from fellow people on the left, obviously. I don't think you would ever be saying Bernie Sanders has nice policies, but whatever. I imagine you do secretly when we don't speak. But, Hillary, she's got the best chance of winning. Well, how the fuck did that turn out, Rick Morris? How the fuck did that turn out?
Kyle, I'm having flashbacks to 96. Flashbacks to 96. My boy, Pat Buchanan. Second in Iowa, one New Hampshire, and they foisted the corpse of Bob Dole upon us. So I've been where you're sitting right now. I've been in that chair. But interesting that you on the left, much more of a conformist than me. When Rand Paul didn't get the Republican nomination, I said, I'll see you in hell. And I voted for Daryl Castle. Interesting that you conformed.
And you were there now, I believe, for voting for Daryl Castle. Whatever. And I've learned this. So the first presidential election that I was eligible to vote for was 2000. I did not vote for a major party candidate, quote unquote. And that one I voted for Ralph Nader.
I went Buchanan.
Okay, well, there we go. But in two of the four subsequent elections, I have learned something. Where I have voted for the Democrat who lost, I've learned something. And that's, an anti-vote doesn't win. And that's
right.
I'm speaking of, the walking corpse known as John Kerry in 2004, and then, HRC a few days ago. It doesn't. I spoke about this to some people early on, and they told me I was wrong, but negatives are actually overrated. You had two candidates with very high negatives, and that was going to cancel each other out. But, you know, I am just so irate in retrospect. I'm mad at myself, you know, and you needled me a little bit. You did it a little bit too early, I'll point out, on text message about being bitter about switching to Hillary. That was a little early, okay? I didn't want to fucking hear that when you said that. I'm mad at myself now, and I knew I was mad at myself then, but I wasn't ready to admit it. You said it a little too early, Rick Morris, okay? I was kind of pissed off. But
that's me, man. Too soon is my middle name.
Yeah, too soon indeed. Yeah. But the Democratic Party just – it's funny that you brought up the Dole Buchanan thing on your side 96 because do you understand – you know this, and anyone listening to this show knows this. I need to repeat something out loud, though, and to have it sink in. Do you realize that the Democratic Party is 0-3 against George W. Bush, who beat them twice, and Donald fucking Trump?
How about that?
How embarrassing is that? I mean, if you don't hear that and then try to maybe reevaluate where you are as a party, I got no sympathy for you. I also, by the way, have no sympathy for the percentage of Latino voters who went for Donald Trump. I mean, you talk about morons. I'll break rank for my party and just say that right now. I mean, geez, dumb do you have to be?
Well,
all I can say is... Go ahead.
Well, thank God for phone, Facebook, other ways of keeping up with people. I sure am going to miss you and the old lady when you guys move to Canada.
Yeah, well, you know, that was discussed for a brief time in bed, you know, and not to bring people into the bedroom or anything like that on the program, but it was, you know, we always did, you know, we said it, do you think you could do it? I know somebody who lives in Canada, but, you know, that quickly goes. It just sounds too hard, really, to be honest with you. Who knows? Maybe we could rent. I don't know. Who knows? So I just, you know, I'm just so irritated. You know, another reason too, and this maybe can lead into the football discussion, which is I know why people are listening.
I'd love to know how. Go ahead.
Yeah. Is someone who makes a living making predictions, I'm also angry that I didn't see it coming. That's something else that bothered me in the last 24 hours because I wonder if you picked up on this or anything. There were so many warning signs that this could happen, that Hillary was in trouble. So many. I had a conversation with a buddy during the primary season, and it was when I was starting to get a little irritated and down on Bernie's chances because he was getting crushed in the South, as you remember. I mean, he got waxed there. And a buddy of mine who probably did not vote in the Democratic primary, probably didn't vote in either primary, quite frankly, pointed out to me – it was Chad Repek, by the way, the Bob Sacramento of the show – pointed out to me, he's like, you know, it sucks that Bernie's getting killed in these states because Hillary's not going to win them in the general election.
Wow, that's an interesting point.
You know,
yeah,
and
Bernie Sanders was a, there was an inverse relationship between Bernie Sanders running well and areas where collard greens are popular food. Put it that way.
Okay, come on, stop it. That's ridiculous. Yes, and where people still wish there was slavery too. Let's not throw that in.
You're imputing that to some fine people.
Yeah, I know Nick Saban didn't know it was election day, but you know, who knows? Maybe it was crop day for some people down there on the farm. But listen to this. Do you know how many states that Hillary won in both the Democratic primary and general election? By that, I'm referring to she carried the same state in both races. Do you know how many, what the number is?
I don't know, but fun fact, Michigan wasn't one of them.
No, she didn't carry that neither, because remember, she lost Michigan.
Right.
That's another reason why I wasn't surprised about Michigan and Wisconsin. Bernie didn't destroy her in Michigan. That was the big upset, if you remember. Wisconsin, he did crush her, if I recall. You know, as much as, it depends on your definition of crushing, but it was a comfortable win for Bernie, if I recall. All right, the answer to my question, the number you are looking for, correct answer, 9, which is frightening.
Wow.
9 states. That is very limited appeal. And you can probably guess them, but we only have a 45-minute show. We won't go through that. I'll save you the time. It was California. California, obviously, was going to go blue general regardless. And it should be pointed out by the time that rolled around in the Dem primary, you know, Bernie had kind of run out of gas and cash.
Yeah.
Nevada, which was a very closely contested race in the primary, and I thought was a bad sign early when Bernie lost that. Illinois is not a surprise. New York, which, again, is not a surprise. And then the northeastern states, kind of sans Vermont and I think Rhode Island. She won the other one, New Jersey, Delaware. Well, Delaware's in New Jersey,
Okay.
New England, but you know what I mean. New Jersey, Delaware, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Hampshire was. I think that actually includes New Hampshire, by the way. So she, which was a virtual tie, so I think she only won 8. Oh, Maryland. I forgot Maryland. So we're going a little bit further down the coast than New England. I apologize.
Well, here's the thing. My last point on any of this is I didn't see it coming. My predictions at the FDH Lounge blog, the FDH Lounge multimedia magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com, I had Hillary winning, I think, about 313 electoral votes, 50 to 44. I missed it as well. But there's parts of this that I saw. I was optimistic about my guy because I thought at the beginning, because I thought this was going to be a year for scrambling the coalitions. The old coalitions are dead. I was kind of right because Trump kind of did that. But another thing that I saw too, my friend Colin Delaney, editor of epolitics.com, go check that out, great site, left of center fella that I like having on the show to break things down with. He didn't agree with me, but I said this months ago when I first started seeing these during the Olympics. I said the biggest waste of advertising we've seen are these ads. I'm Hillary Clinton. Did you know Donald Trump is a scumbag? He said I was wrong. I said, I think it's baked in the cake. You're not changing any minds with that. Well, yeah, I tweeted at him the other night, and I was like, well, who was right, who was wrong on that one? So it was
Yeah, you were right, and it's kind of shocking that it didn't, but again, it goes back to what I just said a few moments ago. The anti-vote doesn't count. You can I gave an anti-vote. 2004, when I voted for Kerry, that was an anti-vote. That wasn't me, you know, skipping to the polls with pride saying, I cannot wait for a John Kerry presidency. That was me skipping to the polls with pride saying, dear Lord, I don't care if my main man Harambe gets in there. We got to get rid of George W. Bush. By the way, I think Harambe tested a lot higher on most IQ tests than George W. Bush. I could lose.
As somebody who was terrified of John Kerry, I cast the Bizarro World Kyle Rass vote. I cast the exact opposite vote for the Bizarro World reason because John Kerry terrified me. So we were mirror images.
Well,
we canceled each other out.
Okay, well, regardless, mine was they were both anti-votes. Your anti-vote was on the right side. Mine was. But here's the thing. You can tell someone why not to vote for somebody, but most people, and the people who matter in these elections, need a reason to vote for you. And at the end of the day, Hillary Clinton did not give hardly anyone outside of her hardcore base. My wife is one of those people. But outside of people like my wife, there wasn't a damn person who wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton. And that's why she lost. People can blame it, and there are very other legitimate reasons, okay? I'm going to say stuff. I mean, I think that, you know, a lot of people whose views on race relations are atrocious came out of the woodwork to vote in this election that may not have otherwise. I believe those are called racists. There was a lot of voter fraud in certain swing states. I don't know really the point of making it hard for people.
But enough about the Philadelphia inner city.
What's that? John Kennedy did it in 1960, and I didn't mind it then, but he still did it. At the end of the day, you can talk about that, and it played a role, but if the Democratic Party does not do soul-searching, and, you know, they can't win at all levels. I mean, the Democratic Party, they're so right. You know, wasn't that like the opening scene on Newsroom? People always share that clip on social media. If the Democrats are so fucking smart, why do they lose all the time? And they do. They lose way too much. There needs to be serious soul-searching. I'm not saying Bernie Sanders would have won, but my opinion right now is either he would have won or he would have lost much worse. It's one of the two.
I think that's a cool point. I think there's a very good chance
he
would have won.
He either would have failed to cover or the outright dog would have won straight up. You know what I'm saying? To bring it to football.
Well, and there's our transition point. You said off air you were prepared to go dehydrated on these games. We're going to find out just how much now that we've done this. So we start off my picks last week, 7-5-1, 65-62-6 for the year. It gets a lot fugglier from there. 1-1-3 on my big three, 8-18-1, 0-1 on my big three. Still looking for the first W, but now I'm going to take I'm taking the challenge of trying to go 0-17 on those. I'm going to try and tank myself from here and see if I can carry it off. Kyle, you were, I believe, 3-2, putting you at 24-26 for the year, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
There
we are.
Yeah,
exactly. Browns Thursday night game on two counts. Very little to say about this, partially because of when this is going up and partially because it's the Browns. 0-9 Browns at the 4-4 Ravens. Thursday, 8:25 Eastern time, MT Bank Stadium in Baltimore on the NFL Network only. Surprise, surprise about that. Jim Nance, Phil Sims, Tracy Wolfson on the call. Spread has fluctuated here. 8.5, the Ravens were doing it at the outset, up to 10, now down to 7.5, I believe. Long story short, there's a case to be made that the wheels have completely come off for the Browns and they're going to be like the 08 Lions and just get waxed the rest of the way out from here. That may be the case, but I'm not convinced until after this game is over. The Browns are an annoying bad team, which means that they will get a backdoor cover when you least suspect it. I think we all least suspect it in this game here, so I'm on the Browns.
Very interesting how the line has trickled down today. There seems like there's some late money coming in on Cleveland, which is quite interesting. Part of me wants to endorse Cleveland because they're off a bad loss, Baltimore off a huge win against Pittsburgh, but canceling that out for me, and this is a no play, this game, is the fact that we always see the better team just kind of dominate on Thursday. I think it's been, four of the last five is what I'm trying to say. The favorites just kind of waxed its opponent, so I'm staying away here.
Don't blame you. There's a lot of reason for everybody to stay away from this game, both watching and betting on it. Going to Sunday, the 5-3 Houston Texans at the 2-6 Jaguars, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Everbank Field in Jacksonville on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon on the call. This is a game where Jacksonville started off. They were laying 1 point. This has kind of gone all over the place here. Subsequently now at this point, they're laying 2 points. And, again, real tough one here. This is one where, again, the Jaguars can't be quite as bad as they've looked. They made the shakeup at offensive coordinator here. It didn't bear any fruit yet, but one of the things that I'm looking at here is just the fact that there was some brief improvement late in the last game from Blake Bortles. And I do realize fairly late and maybe when it didn't count for anything, but I'm on Jacksonville at home in this spot.
It's interesting the line move you spoke of because they actually opened +1 and have moved them as high as -2 in some spots, despite getting the vast minority of the bets. It looks like it's a sharp money move in the line there, which is of note. Pinnacle, which is typically the sharper book, though, still had the game as a pick'em last time I looked. So that, you know, maybe questions how sharp that money is on the move. Jacksonville's only 2-6. You referenced they've been very good. I cashed them last week against Kansas City, but it was ugly. And man, I've watched them a couple times this year. They look awful. Houston's off a bye, remember. They've won the last 4 meetings here, covering 3 times. I'm staying away. The line move has me confounded.
Okay. Yeah, I can't quite make out what's going on with that one either. A game that we might have thought at the beginning of the season might have been a dark horse Super Bowl preview. Not so much now. And if one of the teams makes it there, it won't be the one we might have thought. The 6-2 Chiefs at the 3-5 Panthers, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Obama bailed out Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on CBS.
Don't start with that. Come on. We only got a couple weeks left. Don't start that.
Past Ian Eagle, along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn on the call. Carolina's laying 3, up from 2.5 initially. in this spot here, I'm on the Panthers. The Chiefs are a little bit kind of banged up offensively. I don't think they're going to be able to sustain it very much. I've been on Carolina a lot this year and gotten pummeled a lot for it. But in this spot, they've rewarded me more so recently here. I'm on them again. I'd like to see Kansas City do it on the road with some of the injuries that they've had, especially offensively. Don't think they're up to it.
I wanted to actually lay the points here, but I'm not. Carolina, here's the thing. I'm not surprised how poorly they're doing at the betting window. Remember at the year I told you they had that great ATS record last year? We all predicted the regression this year. It's just been a little bit harder than expected. So I'm staying away. Kansas City probably better than the final score showed last week against Jacksonville. So would it shock me if you come out and are right on this game? No, but I'm not going to lay the point. Chicken move.
All righty. Theme for the next one is the nation's two biggest cities and the nation's maybe two hardest to watch offenses. It's the 3-5 Rams at the 3-6 Jets. 1 o'clock Eastern time from MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford on Fox. Tom Brennan and Charles Davis, Peter Schrager on the call. Jets are weighing 2 in this one, down from 2.5 offensively. This is a game where, again, just from an aesthetic standpoint, you're rooting for a blimp to hit the field and take out both teams because nobody really deserves to win this one. But all things being equal, I'm on the Jets right now as I think the slightly less abhorrent of the two offenses. They're at home. Rams have been doing a lot of traveling recently here. You factor in that a trip across the pond as well here. So I'm on the Jets just because I have less contempt for them than the Rams. That doesn't say much.
It sucks that you have to pick them all because I have zero interest in this game. Don't anticipate a very huge handle. Quite frankly, this should probably be the lowest bet game on Sunday. The idea of laying points with the Jets against anyone, not very appetizing to me. But this is an early start time for the Rams, and they've lost 4 in a row. Interesting note, I don't know what it means, but I have it in my notes. Both teams have played only 3 home games to this point. So Jets could be a little road weary. The Rams could be a little road weary, but again, Jets is a favorite. We talk about that in the past. I don't like laying points in bad teams, and the Jets are one of the worst teams in the league this year. The better team is actually getting points in this matchup, believe it or not. They're not much better, but they're slightly better.
Yeah, well, that ain't saying much. Up next here, the Falcons will try to avenge the 2004 NFC Championship game, the 6-3 Atlanta Falcons at the 4-4. Eagles, 1 o'clock Eastern time from the link in Philadelphia on Fox. Kevin Burkhardt, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on the call. This is a game where Philadelphia is laying 2 points, had been 1 initially, moved to a pick 'em. So it's kind of gone all over the place here. You've talked about this before, actually, in the games that just passed us here. Better team getting points. That right now, undeniably, is the Falcons. I'm on the Falcons in this spot here. The Eagles have just continued to be reeling after that start that they had, that unexpected, and I said it at the time, fluky start to the season here. An equally fluky win over the spiraling Vikings a couple weeks back. It will not repeat itself here. Atlanta to cover and probably to roll.
My fear here is that the stock on the Atlanta side is too high and the stock on the Philadelphia side is too low coming in this game. Very high ticket count on the Falcons, and I'm not sure what you're looking at. I'm looking right now, Atlanta's back into the role of favoritism. They're either minus one or minus two there as I clear my throat. It's interesting, okay. Philadelphia has actually lost and failed to cover the last 3 meetings between these two, including 26-24 and a Monday nighter week 1 of last year. They were the road favorite in Atlanta for that game. Philly, you mentioned it. They've dropped off a cliff after the 3-0 start. Should be pointed out, 2 of those wins were against Cleveland and Chicago. There's 1-4 straight up and against the number since. Atlanta, should be pointed out, had the extra time to prepare as they're coming off a Thursday night game. I guess all the games I'm making plays on are backloaded again this week. I feel the last time I was on the show it was like that. I'm passing here because the Falcons are definitely the better team, but I'm leery of the heavily publicly endorsed short road favorite.
All right. The aforementioned stinky of late 5-3 Vikings They are also looking to avenge an NFC Championship loss. This one from 1987. They are at the Washington Redskins, 4-3-1. 1 o'clock Eastern time from FedEx Field in Landover on Fox. Dick Stockton, Chris Spielman, Christina Pink on the call. And this is a game where the Redskins are laying 2.5 points, had been 1.5 at the open, went up as high as 3, settled back down to 2.5. This is a spot where, again, we've talked about it before, this sort of wave kind of theory, riding the waves here. I think the Vikings have bottomed out at this point. I'm back on them in this spot here against the Redskins. I just don't have a lot of faith in Washington's ability to win against particularly what is a very good defense here in this spot. I'm on Minnesota.
I'm not going to be playing Minnesota down the stretch at all. I think we're starting to see some of their warts. Peter King probably desperately trying to delete that Sam Bradford is the league MVP article he wrote last month. This team has just not looked good. Yeah, after what were they, when they were 5-0, I don't think he didn't say yes, that this was going to, I mean, he did admit that it could be a bubble and, you know, it was by no means an endorsement that he would win it by season's end, but he said through 5 weeks Sam Bradford was the most valuable player in the league. I disagreed at the time. I certainly disagree now. Washington, it should be pointed out, is off a bye, and they tie, for that matter, if you remember, a couple weeks ago in London against the Bengals. They are a surprising 5-1 against the spread their last 6 games. Thing that Minnesota hasn't really, or pardon me, Washington hasn't really regressed as hard as I thought they might this year. But I'm not a fan of either team. So I'm, again, laying off. Sorry, people.
All right.
I have played, Minnesota. I assure you.
Right. Minnesota, going back to how we opened the show, they're a bubble that even Alan Greenspan wasn't oblivious to. Hashtag see what I did there. Up next, it's the 2-6 Bears at the 3-5 Buccaneers. 1 o'clock Eastern Time Sunday from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa on Fox. We have a crew I haven't seen before, Dan Halleck, David Deal, and Holly Saunders on the call. And this is a game where Tampa Bay started by laying a point. I believe they're getting a point now. Quite simply on that basis, two very bad teams. I'm going to go with the team that has become the dog in this spot. You've coached me on that previously. I'll take Tampa Bay getting a point at home.
These are two of the worst home teams, maybe, pardon me, in league history. I'm having some voice issues here today, man. I need to get something to drink. As I bring this up here, the Bucs, we've talked in the past ad nauseum about, you know, Chicago's woes under John Fox at Soldier Field. Well, Tampa Bay is 3-17 straight up its last 20 home games. That includes 0-4 this year and 0-4 against the number, too.
Yeah.
Yikes. Some books were a little slow hanging a line here because of Jameis Winston, but he's seems good to go. Bears have won and covered the last 3 meetings, but all those wins were by 6 points or less. Is Tampa Bay, you know, we say it about Chicago, I kind of want to say it about Tampa Bay here. They're going to lose every home game? Probably not. I could see the Bucs getting the check here, but I'm not playing this one either. I think all 5 of my plays, by the way, are going to be the last 5 games we talk about. I just re-looked at your big 3 while you were talking, and I think it's the last 5 games. Or 5 of the last 6.
All right.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason I'm on Tampa Bay also, too. They're due to win 1 at home, although they've been due for a while, you could say. Up next, the 4-4 Dolphins will try to avenge that cheating loss in the 1981 playoffs when Kellen Winslow and the Chargers unconscionably ate bananas to fortify themselves in the heat, the 4-5 Chargers this year. Sunday, 4:05 Eastern time from Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego on CBS. Greg Gumbel, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. San Diego is laying 4 points. Started at 3, went up to 3.5, so it's been inching that way. This is a thing here, again, and looking at waves teams are riding on and stocks. I'm selling on the Dolphins right now. I've been buying on San Diego for a while, as you have been. I look for that to continue here. San Diego to cover the 4.
You will do anything. You will just come up with anything. Eating bananas? What in the hell was that all about? San Diego, as you know, was my pick to win the AFC West this year. A lot of that was contingent on the other 3 teams all slipping. That half of the equation has not worked out at all. The other 3 teams all 6-2 right now. San Diego needs to keep winning. I do think they'll win, but I didn't play San Diego last week. It was the first time in a while. I'm not going to play them again. I just like them more in that underdog role than I do as a favorite. All of their games tend to end up close at the end. So not a team I want to lay points with. I'll look forward to taking them, plus the points, hopefully, when those opportunities arise down the stretch.
All righty then. Up next, the 7-1 Cowboys are at the 4-4 Steelers, who will be looking to avenge Neil O'Donnell in the Super Bowl about 20 years ago. 4 o'clock Eastern time from Heinz Stadium in Pittsburgh on Fox, with the A-team of Buck, Aikman, and Andrews on the call. Pittsburgh is laying 2.5 in this one, down from 3 initially. You look at how these teams have been playing of late, and this is not quite a why ask why in my part, but in light of all that, it is a surprising point spread. But I'm going to go back to the wave theory again here. I think it's time to sell on the Cowboys, buy on the Steelers after bottoming out, my guess is, against Baltimore in a game where, by the way, I had the Ravens, and very few people, I think, were saying that they had a chance if Roethlisberger came back. But I think that was the bottom out game. I will reluctantly take the team I loathe, the Steelers, laying the 2.5 here.
Yeah, this is my first recommendation of the week. It's on the Steelers. Dallas has the best ATS record in the league. It's either 7-1 or 7-0-1, depending on what line you got in that week one game with the Giants. I almost said match. I just think, yeah, it's time for Pittsburgh to get well with Big Ben back. It was a disastrous offensive performance last week against the Ravens, but the Ravens are good defensively, much better than the Cowboys. And, yeah, say what you will, all the key buzzwords, bubble, regression, yada, yada, yada. Dallas is due to drop one, in my opinion. So Pittsburgh's the first recommendation of the week. First of 5.
We both agree that they will here. Up next, it's the Sunday night game, maybe the most anticipated regular season game of the year, the rematch of Super Bowl 49, the 5-2-1 Seahawks at the 7-1 Patriots. 8:30 Eastern time from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough on NBC with Michaels, Collinsworth, and Tafoya on the call. This is a game where New England is laying 7.5 points, up from 7 initially. I'm not saying that this is purely because of the hook, although that's another thing that you've beaten into me over a period of time. But I look at the way that the Patriots have just been rolling recently here, and the Seahawks have really been up and down and kind of erratic as they've been in the first half of the season in some recent years here. But the calendar has flipped over to November. 7.5 seems like a lot to me. I know that they're having to go over to the other coast here, but at least it's a night game. I'm on the Seahawks because they're undeniably a live dog. I don't necessarily think they're going to win, but they can. I'll take them getting the 7.5.
Yeah, this is a recommendation for me. Similar to that Dallas-Pittsburgh game, the public is really all on one side here. They're all on Dallas in that game, and they're all on New England here. And you can see there's a reason. New England is, I think, right now the unquestioned top team in the league. They're off a bye. Seattle's on a short week. Remember, they played Monday night, and that one went down to the wire against Buffalo. But I think a few too many people are writing off the Seahawks. They don't get blown out. I mean, you know, maybe they're not as good as we thought this year, but they never get blown out, really. I'm taking the points here, absolutely. Second recommendation of the week. Seattle.
All righty, that's number 2 for you. We move to the Monday nighter. It's the 3-4-1 Bengals at the 5-3 Giants, 8:30 Eastern time, MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford. Sean McDonough, along with John Gruden, Lisa Salters, on the call on ESPN. And the Giants started by laying a point here. It moved up to 2.5. I believe it has moved to a pick'em at this point. Not that that, again, really, with the numbers being in that zone, really affects where I'm going with my pick here. But, again, macro-level theory, I've been using this with a couple of games this week. I know that it's kind of dangerous to do that, although I think it probably is a little safer if you couch it in the whole waves kind of a thing here, too. Again, I don't think the Bengals are as bad record-wise or on the field as they've looked thus far this year. If you think that the Giants are going to be 6-3, you got to be very, very ready to proclaim them as a strong potential playoff team at this point. And I'm not really there. I don't think the Bengals are at this point, frankly, but I'm pretty sure that the Giants aren't. I'm on the Bengals in this spot. They've got to bounce back. They've got to start looking better. It's almost the law of averages here. I'm taking them getting or giving 0 on Monday night.
Yeah, it looks like sharp money's on the Bengals here because the number of tickets is slightly higher on the Giants, but the lines come down. Look, I said before the Giants would be a playoff team. I actually still think they will be, but as a wild card. I picked them to win the NFC at the start of the year, but it's going to be as a wild card if they do make it. Dallas clearly appears to be running away with things in that division. But I'm on the Bengals here, same as you. I just think that this is kind of a get-well-ish game for them. They had a tie against Washington. They're off a bye, so they've had plenty of time to get over London and what happened there. This should probably be the best game the Bengals have played to date. I don't like them as a playoff team moving forward, unlike the Giants, but the team I'm projecting to be a non-playoff team will beat the team I'm projecting to be a playoff team here.
Well, that's another thing, too, in looking at it, that with the Bengals, this is actually a long layoff for them. I think beneficially so. Not only were they on the bye, but they're playing on a Monday night here. So it's a longer layoff even than usual here. It will probably work to their benefit. By the way, something skipped over as we made our abrupt transition into football at the start of the show here, or start of the football portion anyways. On the bye this week, Indianapolis, Buffalo, Detroit, and Oakland, as I wait to get that in until we get to our big three here for this week. But we start in terms of my big three, which, again, a mere, at this point in time, 8-18-1 for the season, nowhere near as good as my overall plays, where, again, I've been rallying to the point where 52.4% for the season is within play. I'm only about two or three games off of that pace right now. We'll see. The big three has been suffering, though. We start with the 6-3 Broncos at the 4-4 Saints, 1 o'clock Eastern time from the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in New Orleans on CBS, with the A-team of Nance, Sims, and Wolfson on the call. This is a game where New Orleans is laying 3 points up from, 2.5 points. I had been a pick'em at the open here. I was looking at the wrong point spread. I can't even read my writing sometimes. I'm just a very, very stubborn individual, as we know, as has been indicated on the show here. I'm a bitter clinger. I've been saying for a while now, Saints fraud, Saints fraud, Saints fraud. Well, I'm going to keep beating that drum until the rhythm starts to get going in the right direction for me here. I'm on the Broncos in this spot here. Undeniably the better team getting points in this spot. Denver getting the 2.5, and they won't need it.
Funny, when you said you were a better clinger, I was expecting to hear some Second Amendment shite come next. But, wow, you surprised me because I am with you here. This is a recommendation for me, too. The better team is absolutely getting points in this. Look, I'm with you that the Saints have really surprised me with some of these wins the last couple weeks. But I'll point this out. I don't think I'm as strong on this one as you are. I think of my five recommendations this week, this is the weakest. Because Denver, remember, is a team that I thought would regress this year, and they were a little bit better in the first half than I thought they'd be. So I'm a little scared. But it's interesting that New Orleans has kind of been a dog in a lot of these home games, and now all of a sudden it's flipped back. They're getting some of that old respect. Probably a good time to go again.
In terms of strategy, by the way, it's interesting. As far as my strongest plays, I'm going with my weakest play of the bunch, not for this game, but for the lock pick to end the show here, because like I said, at this point I'm going to try and go 0-17. I'm going to see if I can do it. But it's going to be a team that I'm going to pick, but it's going to be my weakest pick of the bunch, and I'm going to see if it holds up. Up next, it's the 4-4 pack at the 4-5 Titans, 1 o'clock Eastern time, Nissan Stadium in Nashville on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call, along with Daryl Moose Johnston and the lovely Candelora Oakman. This is a game where the line for this one is Green Bay laying 2.5 up from the 1.5 initially. Exactly the same kind of rationale in this game here. The better team is not getting points, I guess, but when it's down to 2.5, that's pretty negligible anyways. The Packers are more than 2.5 points better than the Titans. I'm going to say Titans fraud relative to that 4-5 record. I am not a believer in them. This is a get-well game for the Packers, and I'm sensing this is the first game where you and I diverge. I'm on the pack laying 2.5.
I said I was going to have a play on five of the last six games. This is the exception. I don't have a play on this game at all. This is the most vintage Rick Morris play ever. Green Bay is getting 84% of the ticket counts as a short road favorite. I don't know if they're 3 points better than Tennessee on the road. I'll be honest with you. Green Bay, they're not a fun team to watch anymore.
They're not.
They're just not. I went against them last week with Indianapolis, and I was like, when the Colts were winning outright, I was like, all right, this is good. You know, they'll, you know, hopefully hold on and cover. I was not expecting an outright win in that spot at all.
Yeah, that was something that none of us were expecting. I was on the Colts as well, but, yeah, not expecting it quite to go that way. Up next, my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 10. Locks 0-9 to this point. As I've said, folks, I always said they were a lock to do something. You'll notice that I never specified what exactly. It's the 1-7 49ers at the 3-4-1 Cardinals, 4:25 Eastern Time from University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale on Fox. Chris Myers, Rondé Barber, and Cast Lounge guest Jennifer Hale on the call. This is a game where Arizona is laying 13.5 points, up from 11.5 initially. Me guesses that that's probably all public money here on Arizona, looking for a get-well kind of a spot in what has been a very disappointing season for them to date. I, in this spot, believe it or not, am actually on the 49ers. I am, again, this is my absolute weakest play of the week, so I'm going to make it my lock, and I'm going to hope that this brings me to 0-10 because I'm now embracing the challenge here at this point of making it there. But, you know, Mr. Unpatriot himself, Colin Kaepernick, starting to look a little bit better.
Oh, goodness.
Of late. Starting to look a little bit better here, and I just don't trust the Cardinals. This is a spot where, again, I understand why the public is looking at this as a get-well spot, but I don't think that it is. The otherwise fine analysts on the CBS Sports Network, one of the only pregame shows I really enjoy watching is the one that they run on the CBS Sports Network on Sunday mornings. But they were a little bit too quick to proclaim San Francisco as the worst team in the league last week. Have you seen the Cleveland Browns? Now, there's no doubt that the 49ers are 31. I think we would all agree with that.
Yeah,
I just don't have enough respect for Arizona to take them here. So I'm taking San Francisco for what would probably be a weak-ass backdoor with a 13.5.
I either have some good news or bad news for you, depending on how you want to look at it. Do you want
are
to
we
be wrong
all?
Here? Do you want to be wrong here? Because if you
kind
do,
of.
That's going to mean I'm wrong. I'm with you
Ooh.
Here on this pick. I actually really like this play. It's funny that you said it's your weakest, and you're doing it using it in this spot. This is like one of my three stronger plays. You know me. You give me all these points in a division matchup. I'll gladly take them. In these dark times of Donald Trump, I have to turn to Colin Kaepernick to lead me to the light. I have no choice. San Francisco, by the way, here's another thing. Since they won week one, 28-0 over the Rams, they have not covered since that time. Longest ATS skid in the league right now. At 7 games, they are the worst ATS team in the league. I think they've got, I mean, if you can't cover this spread, oh boy. I mean, I don't know. Maybe Cap shouldn't get off that knee. Next week, then. I don't know. It's, I mean, you got to. I mean, for me, two touchdowns in this league, automatic. Automatic take.
It's looking like I might have fluked into my first cover then for a lock pick. For the sake of my own pride,
yeah.
I wish I'd embraced this tactic a little bit earlier in the season, but better late than never, I suppose. So I'm on San Francisco as my lock, Green Bay and Denver, my other plays. Your plays this week, you are on Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Seattle, San Francisco, and Denver. And as I'm sitting here with about 60 seconds to go, I can't even believe this. I am right now literally patting myself on the back. I don't know if you can hear this, people. I've got to be the best pace man in the business. We made it through the entire slate after our political rant to start the show here. That's unheard of. Props to me.
You know, I think it actually worked better for the show because we had to be a lot tighter, industry term.
Maybe, maybe we'll start with a rant subsequently here and see where that goes. It was maybe that won't just be a one-time thing, people, but, you know, it's you're always prone to getting all kinds of craziness on this show, whether it be sports, politics, or whatever, even in the midst of pro wrestling, I was going to say, instead of sports. That shows you how tired I still am from the other night here. But, again, A interesting slate of games this week here following a momentous event in American history, Kyle Ross, the election of the Orange Goblin as our 45th president.
You know, the Orange Goblin has a lot in common with the original Orange Goblin, Hulk Hogan, doesn't he?
He kind of does.
Yeah.
Well,
drawing money for Vince McMahon and hate black people. Hey, there you go. There's a winning combination.
And here I was just going to point.
Isn't that two traits of all successful Americans? I don't know. I'll have to check on that.
See, I thought you were going to be talking about the coked up promos being in common. But anyways, thank you for joining us.